We good?
Mm-hmm.
You good?
Okay.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is the Money Basics Podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Money Basics Podcast. Today, we are breaking ground on episode 16. We got it right this time because last time we were mistaken on what episode we were at. So today we had a special request that we'd heard maybe a week ago, I guess, that came through socials. Somebody wanted to hear our thoughts on, I'm not sure exactly what it was. We kind of took this and ran with it, but it's basically traveling on a budget / budgeting for travel, which are two different but similar things. And these are kind of two things that go hand in hand that we want to discuss in this episode. And it's also something we happen to be working on right now. Which we'll get into very shortly.
I can clarify it a little bit. So it was basically the specific request was tips and tricks, traveling on a budget.
Cool. Yeah. And that is what we'll cover, but also we're going to basically cover the whole gamut of travel budgeting, like from start to finish, including like on the trip.
Sure.
And with us today, so obviously you got myself, you've got Jordan as usual, and we have a special guest today. My fiance Sabrina, who has been on the show very briefly early on in one of the early episodes. Welcome back to the show, Sabrina.
Well, thanks for the round of applause.
And one of the reasons that we brought Sabrina aboard the show is because she is kind of the de facto queen of budgeting. Well, at least that's what I proclaim her as, because she is super on top of budgeting. And she has a couple of unique challenges, we'll say, when it comes to saving and preparing and budgeting and being able to afford appropriately like these fun things like travel and whatnot, because she's self-employed. So let's get Sabrina warmed up here talking a little bit. So Sabrina, how did you get started with budgeting?
I got started with budgeting being self-employed. So when I first started my home business, I had to figure out where my income's coming, with tips, just my normal income, how I'm going to be spending this money and paying myself and for the business too. So I'm a massage therapist. So working from home, I have to, have clearly a bed for me to massage people with, cleaning linens and all these other expenses that come along with it, as in washing my linens.
Oil,
exactly. There's a lot that,
all that stuff.
There's a lot that goes into it. So I got into budgeting mostly to see if working from home was beneficial, especially with all the hard work that comes with it, or should I just work for a clinic and have less of a headache? So I actually talked to Dan because I knew a little bit about budgeting. I was always good with money. I just didn't understand how to use apps. I wasn't really good with it. And Dan ended up telling me about the Google Sheets.
Yeah, the template that we use. And we've posted it before and we can post it again.
We shall link it in this description.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I use. And it's awesome because I have an Android phone. So I just go to my Google Sheets straight to my phone. And I now use it daily. Like as soon as I get a tip from a client, I'm putting it into my income. I put it under tips. And then if I go to the dollar store, I actually did that the other day and my cousin thought it was hilarious. And I bought water because I was really thirsty and it was $1.25 or whatever. And I'm waiting there to see how much it would come up. And he was like $1.25 and I put it in. She's like, why are you doing that? But that's because I pay with cash because with my tips. So I need to know where my tips are coming from and where they're going.
We actually mentioned that story in our last episode, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
But every dollar counts. That was kind of the point I was trying to make last time.
Yeah. Every dollar, especially to me, every dollar counts because I need to know what I'm getting at the end of the month. I'm very different with Mel and Jordan. Like, you guys, when you guys do your budgeting, you know what you're getting per month. I have no idea. Like, one month can vary between like $3,000, the other month can be like 10. Like, it's that extreme. So it's so hard to kind of figure that out. So that's kind of how I got into budgeting.
Nice.
And that's what I do Yeah, I do that daily. And don't even get me started with traveling. I guess you're going to
bring me that way. So just as an open conversation starter for the group, I thought it'd be nice to, before we dive into like what to look at in budgeting for travel and all this stuff, I thought it might be good to talk about why it's important to budget for travel. And Jordan, you and I started a conversation on this a little bit about how you used to travel and deal with finances that way. Would you mind telling our audience a little bit about how you used to run your budget, we'll say?
Yeah, of course. Well, that's why you're laughing, because there was no budget. We didn't have one. So we would basically just say, yeah, we're going on this trip. We're just going to throw it all on the credit card and pay for it later. So in a sense, we were lucky because we both had the availability at the time to pick up extra work, and we didn't have kids, as much expenses, that kind of stuff at the time. So we would just eat, you know, whatever the expense was of going on vacation, throw it on the credit card, and then just work extra to pay it off. So we were pretty lucky in that sense, but that was part of the behavior with our money habits that got us into trouble. And you know, we've gone through that with other episodes and stuff. So like, you know, with shopping and stuff, we used to just go and buy whatever and then pay for it later.
It's like the opposite of what we've been preaching, where it's like, you know, play first, pay for it later. And we preach the complete opposite, like save up money and be prepared, and then you can play when you're ready. Right.
So buy now, pay later. Funny that we sort of bring that up. I was reading an article and a video came out from Bloomberg recently this week that was talking about how these buy now, pay later companies are coming out in full force, and they offer, I don't know if you've noticed, on Amazon, Canadian Tire, different websites have, you can do installments on things. So like whatever it is, like if you can buy something.
I bought running shoes today online, and they had an option. You can do it in installments.
Yeah. And there are no interest, which is legit. They don't charge interest. So you're thinking, why would companies do this if they don't make money or interest, all that kind of stuff? Well, the companies that do these installment plans will approach Amazon or Canadian Tire, whomever, and say, this increases people buying. So customers will buy more products because they can do installments. So you aren't making on the interest, you aren't making out, you're just selling more stuff.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
So I'm sure there's a fee. So I'm sure the companies that give us,
or whoever must give that service.
There must be a fee or some sort of cut or whatever in the background, but.
Well, I actually listened to you guys' podcasts pretty much the whole week, like leading up to this, because I was kind of behind, I'm not going to lie. I know, how dare I. And you were talking about, was it Mel that worked at a clothing store and she would buy all the clothes?
Yeah.
Very similar to what you're talking about. Like, that's the incentive. At least people continue buying. So at the end of the day, the company is growing because now people are buying like four things instead of just one.
Yeah, they get increased volumes.
Yeah.
So then just to switch back to the vacation subject and how we never really planned or budgeted for vacation, just went YOLO. That like affected me. I don't know how it affected Mel. I'm sure it did her too. But I remember like on our trip, I would be stressing. Like say we went down south and we'd be like, let's go on excursions. And I'm like, oof, like I'd stress about that. How are we going to pay for this? Oh, and then I would talk myself into it. I'd say, don't worry about it. You're on vacation, YOLO, you know, and I would do that. So there would be the initial stress. And then I'm pretty good at managing my stress. I would be able to shelf that usually. But sometimes it would come back up on the trip, which is the whole, not the purpose of a vacation, right? You don't want to stress about it. And then I would stress a lot when I got home, because then I'd be like, okay, I need to pick up extra shifts. And then I'd be sitting there waiting for a call for extra shifts at where I was working. And they always came, but there was always a buffer when they would come. Yeah. And I'd be like, okay, good, I picked up some extra shifts. So it'd be like a sigh of relief, you know. So I'd have that build up stress, you know, because I wasn't planning for it. We were just flying up from the seat of our pants. And now I realize it really wasn't a good strategy for us.
Yeah, I think this whole like one of the major reasons for budgeting for travel is that if you do it properly and you're well prepared before the trip, then it just alleviates a lot of the stress, which is usually the point of a trip, is to like kind of relax and enjoy the moment instead of stressing about the cost of it all. So by being prepared up front and you have a budget and a clear plan for how you're going to spend your money and it works, then you can actually fully enjoy your trip and there shouldn't be any major surprises. And it, you know, takes away from that stress.
But again, being self-employed, I have extra stress than you guys deal with. Because when I'm away, I budget for it as in cat. So when I go on vacation, I have to plan pretty much a year in advance. So I can start putting money aside, seeing extra people, not paying myself for those extra people as if I was still working here week or 2 weeks.
You aren't working, so let's say we're going on a trip for 5 weeks. So not only does she have to pay for the hotels, the flights, the food, but she's also not earning an income while I'm very lucky, and you're in the same boat, Jordan, where we get paid vacation. So we'll be on a beach somewhere, and on Thursday, I'll get a paycheck show up in my account, even though I haven't worked. So we have that benefit, but Sabrina does not. So she has to front load that work, or at least that's the strategy, make all kinds of extra work, extra clients, whatever, in the year leading up to it. And then she can have some extra cash that she purposely sets aside to, like, essentially create one of those paychecks for herself.
So I'm budgeting two. Like, think about it. So I'm budgeting as in I'm going to pay myself when I'm away, but I'm also budgeting for the trip.
Yeah, for the cost
of
the
trip. So it's like my fun money. So when I'm on vacation, I'm not like I can use that money, but then also the money as I feel more comfortable because even though I'm away for the 5 weeks, the bills that are still going to come out, like our mortgage, all of that, I'm still paying those bills.
Yeah, of course.
So, So it's two budgetings that I have to do when it comes to vacation.
And I want to just circle back one more point for this overarching question of why budget for travel. So there's obviously the stress reduction that we talked about. But the other factor, like the stress reduction during your trip, I should say. But there's the other factor too, that if you properly budget, then you take away that post-trip stress.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the hangover effect for people who just don't plan and just put it all on credit. If you plan properly and budget properly, you can go on a beautiful, amazing, stress-free trip and come back and not be financially ruined or like freaking out trying to figure out how you're going to pay the credit card bill or whatever. So it kind of alleviates stress on both ends, but also it helps you kind of maintain your path financially speaking. Like it doesn't blow up all your plans, and it can be a very freeing thing. So I think that's really important to understand why you should budget in the first place.
And I think it's important to bring up, and that's kind of, it is the spirit of Money Basics, is the work ethic piece. And we've talked about this a few times, right? And I have to say, I'm thinking about this episode and us talking, and I'm glad you came aboard because I was going to use you as an example, that your work ethic, like you basically work double working up towards a vacation so that you can save up enough money to do it.
Yeah.
Like you could choose not to work.
Yeah.
And then just YOLO it and go on vacation, do whatever the heck you want, be in debt, but you don't. You choose to work extra and pay for it.
And you just saying that too, going back also to one of your podcasts, I think it was an article that you read, people's work ethics nowadays. Yeah. And
it's really
I actually want to put my input on it. For me, I'm literally leaving cash on the table.
Yeah.
If I don't take someone, like if someone messaged me right now and be like, hey, I need a massage. If I don't take them, that's literally me not getting cash.
Yeah.
At least like it's a little bit different with you guys because that would be like overtime kind of thing. But like with me, like that is...
There is no minimum paycheck for you. It's like you eat what you kill, right?
That's such a really good...
Just for the record, she doesn't eat or kill her clients.
No.
Not yet.
Yeah, like, so it's, I'm literally leaving cash on the table. And like, that's how my mindset is. This week actually was really hard and I'm kind of stressing a little bit. I ended up pulling my shoulder. So I didn't go into work on Monday. So that's me literally losing a full, like, that's about $500 for me. So that's me leaving $500 on the table, but I could not work that day. I went into work on Tuesday. I only saw 4 clients. The last 2 I had to cancel because my shoulder was still really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom had surgery this week and I had to take care of her. So I had to take Thursday and Friday off. So I technically only worked Wednesday, like a full shift. And I'm still budgeting and planning for the trip that we're leaving next month. So I just left over $1,000 on the table this week. And I'm like stressing out. So that means this week coming up in pretty much the following 2 weeks, I'm going to be working triple because I'm already working double trying to plan for this trip. And now I need to reschedule the clients that I had to cancel. So I'm working triple for the next 2 weeks, just trying to catch up. And things like this happen where my body starts falling apart because, well, I'm working too much. But it's a give or take. I see the light at the end of the tunnel that I love doing things like this. But yeah, it's like what you said, it's work ethic.
It's good to bring up because I don't know about you, Dan. I'm sure you're in this position at one point. Like when I used to work, I was part-time. I had to work. If I didn't work, I didn't get money. So that changed when I got full-time, and it's a little different now that I'm in management. So I do get a paycheck no matter what. My vacation is a little bit different, that kind of thing. So it's super beneficial, but there are a lot of people in the boat of they have to work. If they don't work, they don't get paid.
Yeah.
But I also want to switch back to the work ethic piece, because in some of the things that I've been reading, because I'm researching this a lot, because now that I'm in management, this is something that comes up a lot, right? With staffing and everything and scheduling. There was something I was listening to the other day about how there are folks that are out there that might have strong opinions about what you just said, saying that you're working triple so that you can go on this trip. People's opinions, there are some people's opinions that they want to find a healthy work-life balance. And I'm not saying you don't have that, but I'm just saying that when you were saying that, it was kind of ringing bells in my head about what I had been watching and reading this week.
Well, this work-life balance thing, this all comes back to a conversation we've had months ago in one of the podcasts, I forget which episode, but it's about defining your priorities. What is important to you, right? If Sabrina's priority, her ultimate priority, was not to go on this trip, this is in your current life, this is top five priorities, right?
Yeah.
If it wasn't ranking that high in priorities, then she wouldn't kill herself to achieve this goal.
And let's be clear, right? Maybe we could talk about that goal. So you guys are going on vacation for what, 5 weeks?
5 weeks.
Yeah. So 5 weeks, right? So we're not just going for a week here to some all-inclusive, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other point is that, you went 3 or 4 years where you hadn't gone home to Portugal, right?
Yeah. It was almost 3 years. Almost 3 years.
And so that was a big thing, right? Last year you guys finally went. Now you're all right, cool. We want to go every year from what you guys are saying. So this is very important to you guys. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And there's also the slightly added point that you do have a business on the island, where she has a rental place there, an Airbnb, which isn't the primary purpose for us going, but it's nice to check up on the place and pick away little decorations, work, whatever.
Well, yeah, that's not the reason why we're going on this trip. Honestly, I want to go back home, and I kind of have to go back home just because of the business aspect of it. But I also want to go on vacation. So that's why we're going for 5 weeks, because the first 3 weeks, we're pretty much going to be traveling Europe and seeing Europe. And then our last 2 weeks, I'm going to go home and just chill. And
home being in the Azores.
Yeah, in the middle of the island.
In the middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
So technically Europe, but not really Europe.
Yeah. So I'm from the islands of Portugal, specifically Terceira is where my house is located. So that's where I have my home, and that's where my business, I guess, kind of lies. My side business?
It might grow.
Because I have my home business as a massage therapist, but then would that be considered a rental?
It's a rental, right?
A short-term rental. Yeah. So I have my broad short-term rental, and there's stuff that I have to do there. So yeah, that's the reason we're trying to go at least every year. Well, I am. I don't know if you'll join.
All right. So let's, in the interest of trying to get through all the things that I was hoping to hit for our requested listener here who wanted to hear about this, let's push this forward a little bit. So I kind of wanted to chunk up our discussion a little bit in somewhat of a logical flow path. So if this whole concept is now we need to budget for the trip before the trip occurs, then we need to start discussing the cost factors around a trip. And I think the first thing that would be interesting to think about is, if we're budgeting for a trip, I mean, step one would probably be to find out how much we expect this trip to cost, right? So how do you determine the cost of a trip?
Should we kind of make our trip an example?
Sure, we could. Yep.
Yeah, so
I'd like that for my own education.
So just so the audience is clear,
because I'm going to Portugal too.
Sabrina and I are going to go to mainland Portugal for 3 weeks, and then at the end of that 3 weeks, we're going to meet up with Jordan and Melly, who are going to meet us in Lisbon. We're going to tour around for a little bit, and then we're all going to catch a flight together back to the island and spend
10 days.
8 or 9 days at that point. Yeah. We're going to spend a little over a week there, and then Jordan and Melly will go home, and we're going to stay for another week or something like that. Yeah,
we'll stay for another week.
And then we'll come home too. So two separate trips, although they're going to overlap. So our trip, Sabrina and I, is 5 weeks, and Jordan and Melly's 10 days, mm-hmm. right? So just for context. But yeah, we can definitely fall back on this trip as an example. So how do you determine the cost of a trip?
Okay, so how me and you planned.
Yeah, sure.
I'm very cheap.
Frugal.
Frugal. There you go. Very frugal.
Money based approved.
So I like looking. So another kind of point, Dan, you can't really take vacation during recruit season.
Yeah. Like I could, but I would feel really bad about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So it's pretty much, when can you take a trip?
Basically, I've got 2 3-month windows out of the year that I could do it like relatively guilt free. So this current window that we're taking advantage of is like the July to September-ish window.
So yeah, so I knew that it's July, September, like to September that we could kind of go away. So I started looking at trips, and I go pretty much on Google and I look at different, like, okay, would it be cheaper going out of Toronto? So we're in Ottawa, and Ottawa, honestly, is horrible when it comes to travel. So
what are you Googling exactly?
I literally...
She's talking flights.
I literally go on Google and go, for example, Ottawa to...
Ottawa. She's getting excited. It's okay. This is good.
I'm like, I go to Ottawa to Lisbon, for an example.
Okay.
I'll look at that. I'll have like a notepad next to me.
Sorry, just to be clear, do you Google literally that, like Ottawa to Lisbon, and then whatever list of airlines pops up?
Okay, yeah, cool. And
so
normally,
you're not going to like a specific airline.
Mm-hmm. No. And Google is pretty good too, that Google will actually have, I don't know what it's, the website, I guess it's Google, no?
Yeah, it's Google Flights. It's
yeah, it's Google, page. Yeah.
Really?
So Google Flights.
Google Flights?
Yeah.
Well, it's just like it shows you all the different flights and you don't
on Google.
And then it'll show you like Air Canada's doing this flight, WestJet's doing this wherever.
Yeah.
And it lists all the different flights, the times of which and the price of each.
Yeah.
And it fluctuates and you can actually look at a calendar view and you can see like if I fly out on Monday, it's $600. If I fly out on Tuesday, it's $420. And you're like, holy crap. So it lets you visualize that, you know, usually not always, but usually flying out on a weekend is not the best idea. And flying out certain days of the week or like a Sunday is a good idea, but it kind of depends on a bunch of factors.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's what I do. So I go on Google Flights, I guess is what it's called. And I just look at price points and I normally look clearly July. And I found that it would be cheaper to go the second week of July. So July.
So that's kind of like the starting point for planning our trip.
Yeah.
Is like picking the smart window to do this.
Mm.
So we're not like, hey, we're going to travel in July. Like that's not like a decision. Like first week, like July 1st, we're going on vacation.
Yeah.
We actually look at the pricing. And then when we find a reasonable window where it's like, oh, hey, you know what? It just so happens that July 8th is really cheap. Then we build our trip and plans around that, not the other way around.
Exactly.
Because the difference can be significant and then multiply that by two because it's both of us buying these flights. So if it's a $200 difference flying apart, like 1 week apart, you know, if I go July 1st or July 8th, let's say, and there's like a $200 difference in flights, well, times that by two, that's a $400 difference. And if we can get, Sabrina can pick her vacation really whenever she wants, and I'm fairly flexible. So like, why wouldn't we just move it a little bit to save $400?
Yeah. Right? And this is a very different strategy compared to like finding an all-inclusive.
Yes.
Because like all-inclusives, you can like Expedia or any of these sort of travel websites and find all these packages, right? So yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like it's a little simpler if you're talking, well, yeah, especially like an all-inclusive would be the simplest because you don't really have to look at all these moving pieces. It's really one moving piece. It's the fixed cost of your trip. And then if you want to do excursions or whatever, then that's something else you have to budget. But that's very, very simple. And we can touch, it's actually on my list here. We will touch on that, but just very quickly, we're going to talk about the more complex trip, like our trip to Portugal.
Yeah.
Sure. So first things first, you look at the cost of flights, right? And we
look at it different flights too. So like I look from Ottawa, again, have my notepad, write down whatever's cheapest there, and then I'll switch it to Montreal. So Montreal is about 2-hour drive. So I'm like, okay, let's look at Montreal. write down whatever is the cheapest there, and then I'll go Toronto, because last year we did Toronto. Toronto ended up being the cheapest.
Yeah, which is like a four-ish hour, a little over 4 hour drive.
Yeah. But, and I have family there, so I just leave my car there, which yeah, makes too.
But when you're factoring in, you know, possibly a $400 savings, it's not necessarily a bad thing to drive a little bit for that.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And that's part of the planning. You have to part of the planning too. It's like gas to go to Toronto or Montreal. Mm-hmm. We have to budget all of that and be like, is it worth saving $50 on a flight? But you're going to spend that on gas. So is it worth it? No. But yeah, but if it's like $200 to $300 cheaper, it is worth it at the end. Yeah. So that's what we ended up doing. I ended up finding it was a lot cheaper. I think it was actually almost $400 cheaper from Ottawa, like than the Ottawa one to go to Montreal. And then Toronto, I think, was $200 more expensive. So I'm like, let's do Montreal, because yeah, it just made sense for us.
So flights are a key factor here. And also it's some other things to consider too, is like, depending what you want to do. If you like, if I 100% want to go see Iceland, for example, well, then you got to fly into Iceland, and they've got very few major airports, so your choices are limited. But like, for example, a few years ago, we wanted to look at the Rockies, the Canadian Rockies. We wanted to do a trip through there. Well, we had a couple of choices to make. We could do Calgary or we could do Edmonton. And honestly, there were probably other choices, but that's kind of where we narrowed in on. So like, also your arriving airport makes sense. So like, if the city of arrival isn't necessarily the main attraction, you might have a little bit of leeway there. And although that might not change your cost of flight a whole lot, maybe it will, maybe it won't. But something to consider is like your accommodations along the way.
Yeah.
So if we landed in Calgary and our goal is to end up an hour away in the Rockies, it's like, okay, on our path over there, where are we going to sleep that night? Or are we arriving late and need a hotel the first night there in the city of Calgary, for example? Would it make more sense to fly into Edmonton? Are rental cars cheaper in Edmonton or are they cheaper in Calgary?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this isn't the perfect example, because for us, we just flew to Calgary, which was actually a little more expensive. But the reason we did that was because we had some friends in the area that were going to hook us up a little bit, show us around. And it was a really great trip. But the thing is, you have to consider all these different angles, these different factors, and how that's going to affect your costs, right?
Exactly.
Other things to determine cost of your trip, like, what are you going to be doing on this trip? So you have to factor in the activities you absolutely want to do. And what these activities cost. Like, if you want to
transportation go, also.
Transportation's a huge cost.
Where and, you're sleeping.
Yep. Accommodation. So is it Airbnb, hotel, hostel, camping?
Mm-hmm.
These are all factors. Do you have multiple people going? Can you get away with sharing a room, or do you need a couple of rooms? These are all things that are going to factor into the cost of your trip. Also consider your food, drink costs. If you're a bit of a booze hound, like I can be occasionally, on trips, you know, you're on a nice beach, it's nice to have a bunch of pints.
You sound like an alcoholic or
a booze hound.
Well, come on, I'm sitting on a nice beach, I want to have some beer.
Yeah.
But you got to factor that into your cost. So it's stuff to consider and factor that into your budget, right? What is food going to cost me? What is drink going to cost me? And you're in Portugal, they got incredible wine. You're not going to drink wine.
It's like, right? €3.
But luckily, it's cheap there. So that's all stuff that you have to factor in to determine the cost of your trip. Okay.
And one thing that we do is we plan a bit ahead, right? So I'm looking at this a year, a little less actually. Normally it's like eight months in advance. I'll start kind of looking at it, start planning a little bit. And yeah, so each month we can add something to it. So like, we can add an Airbnb in Lisbon, for example, which we're not going to do. Luckily, I have a grandpa. Grandpa's house. but we could, like, if we wanted to splurge, we could get a hotel in Lisbon. So we could do that, like, March. We could have bought that. So that will be on the expenses of March. But yeah, we're going away in July. So you can spread out at least your expenses that way, so you can have a better trip.
Yeah. So yeah, it's important to try to think through all the different factors of the things that you're going to be doing and make sure that these things fit your budget. Like, be realistic with your budget, right? Like, if you're barely able to squirrel away like $200-$300 a month, either you have to start saving very early for this trip, or you might have to downsize some of your expectations of the trip or find some corners to cut.
Yep.
And I got some tips here that we're going to, in the next section, we're going to talk about tips for saving money while actually on the vacation. So let's just pedal this along a little bit. So we mentioned it before, but we'll just dive a slight bit deeper. So obviously the type of trip is going to change how you're going to budget for it. So if you're going on some kind of wild adventure to a foreign land and you're traveling a lot, you're moving place to place and doing all that stuff, there's a lot of moving parts that you have to factor in. If you're doing something like a resort vacation, much less complicated, right? So obviously the flight, the all-inclusive package is your fixed cost. But you still will need to factor in, like, how are you getting to the airport? Like, let's say for us, if we're flying out of Toronto, we have to factor in the gas to Toronto, maybe a park and fly, or do you have a place that you can stash your car? Is it cheaper to take a train to Toronto? Stuff like that, right?
Would this be for, like, cruises as well?
Cruises become a little more difficult. Not a whole lot, but there's a bit of added complexity. So I took a cruise once out of Baltimore. So that's all cool. And once you're on the boat, it's like more or less all inclusive. Like booze isn't, but like all your food, your meals and stuff, the things you need to survive is all included. But you now you got to think, how do I get to Baltimore? Then I'm going to need a place to stay depending on how I time it. I got to pay to park the car for a week. Like these are all things you now have to factor in.
How far is that?
Baltimore? It was like an 8 or 9 hour drive, I think.
Oh, okay.
And that's a big factor for cruises. Depending what port you're leaving from, you'll usually fly to that area, to that city to get to the port. So now you got flights and hotels to add on top of that. So it's something to factor in for sure. And then also, if you're drinking a lot on the boat, that's going to increase your costs. And there's like extras and excursions on the ports that you go to. And so all these things you have to think about. So it's good to do a little research on where you're going and what you absolutely want to see and set aside money for that.
Flights too, right? So like when you buy like a cruise, because I've never been on a cruise, but when you buy a cruise, you're just literally buying the cruise experience.
You got to pay your own flight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then other stuff to consider with your, like the type of trip, like maybe you're doing a domestic, like in-country trip. So like we said, a trip to the Rockies, for example, or maybe you go to the East Coast or whatever. These tend to sometimes be cheaper, but not always. And it's a little simpler because there's no foreign currencies or anything like that. And you kind of know what you're getting yourself into for the most part, as far as like how the world works. So yeah, you still have your travel costs and your accommodations and stuff, but there's no weird foreign currency fees, which will kind of help versus international. If I'm going to Portugal, for example, we now need to convert our money to the euro. Mm-hmm. So this complicates things because last year when we went, for every euro we wanted, it would cost us $1.30 Canadian. This year we're going for every euro that we want. Last I checked, it was $1.48. So that's a pretty significant increase on your expense. So it's something, the currency fluctuations are something you need to consider. Next point on my list, we kind of talked about flights. I don't know if there's anything more you want to say, Sabrina. So Sabrina is my go-to for, for flights. And by my go-to, I mean she doesn't let me do it because I'm terrible. But is there anything that we haven't covered so far about how to get better prices on flights?
Honestly, Google people's experiences. That's what ended up saving us, I think, at least for about 300 euros last year. I ended up looking at people's blogs, how they ended up doing things, and I found out that if you actually did multiple cities, especially on inter-islands, if you ended up doing multiple cities, your second flight was free.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So like there is, it depends on what country and exactly what you're doing, but like look at people's blogs and they'll give you tips that like you wouldn't think of. Sometimes even I do one-way trips instead of...
Let's pair that. Sometimes round trip, and if you just build your own round trip with one way, we've seen them cheaper that way sometimes, but sometimes it's more expensive.
Yeah.
There's a lot of variables, and oftentimes they're the exact same, but it's worth a look. You might get lucky.
That's exactly it. Again, I'm very frugal, so I try to look for the little tips and tricks, and I do the research, and that's kind of how I would suggest everyone try to plan their trip.
Yeah.
Even if you're saving like $20, that adds up to like you're saving $20 now on your flight, and then next time like you're renting a car and you're saving $50, like that all starts adding up. So it doesn't matter what you're saving. Like, it's worth the research.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is, like, once again, talking about your arrival airport. So let's say we're going to Portugal and we look at flying into Lisbon. And Lisbon, you know, we just assume that we want to go to Lisbon. So that's where we're going to go. We don't really look at any prices. Like, you might theoretically find, let's say we're going all over Portugal, and we might theoretically find that there's a cheaper flight from wherever we're flying in Canada to go to Porto instead of Lisbon. Like, no, I'm not saying that's the case, but, like, theoretically, yep, you might find a cheaper flight. And it's like, hey, if that's a city we want to go to anyways, let's just rearrange the trip a little bit. Or you might find another city that's cheaper to fly to, and it's, like, altogether cheaper to catch a bus or a train from that city to the city that you actually want to be in. So these are all things to look into. I remember years ago I was with some friends researching a little Europe trip that we never ended up going on, but we had found a lot of examples of this. It's like, well, we want to go to Barcelona, but if you flew in, forget whatever, some other airport and just took a train to Barcelona, you'd save like $150 each. So that's just a little trick you could look into. Another point I have here is the difference between renting a car and using public transportation. And this is something that we ran into a lot on our trip.
Last year's
trip. Where the cost of rental car was so extreme that we found that you could just literally hire a taxi cab for the entire day, and it would be cheaper by a long shot than renting the car and having to pay for gas and the insurance and all that stuff. We just thought, like, okay, we could rent a car and then have the stress of, like, making sure it's fueled up before returning it, like, driving on foreign roads, we don't know where we're going, worried about parking and paying for parking, all this stuff. It's like, or we could just...
Automatic, standard,
yeah, which...
They're all standard.
I'm not super used to it, which on some of these hills would sketch me out a bit.
And it was more money.
Transitions, you mean?
Yeah.
And it's more money to rent an automatic. An
automatic, yeah. So we looked at the price of this, and then I looked at the price of literally hiring a guy to drive around for a day, and it was like half the price, and we have and we don't have to pay for gas because this guy covers his own gas, and he's like, he also acts as a tour guide. Like, we literally had a guy drop us off for a hike at the top of a mountain. It was like a 5 or 6 hour hike, and we said it was a one-way hike. He climbed down this mountain to the ocean, and you're in the middle of nowhere, and the guy's like, yeah, I'll pick you up at the bottom in like 5 or 6 hours, just give me a call when you're close and I'll be waiting for you. And we're like well, I don't know, like, the service might be bad. He's like, well, you know what, I know it'll take you 5-6 hours, I'll go to the bar and I'll have a drink. I'm like, yeah, sounds great. And then we started hiking. I thought, he's our cab driver and he's gonna be plastered. But anyways, it worked out really good. But the fact is, we paid like half the cost of a rental car, had no stress, didn't have to worry about gas, and we had an awesome tour guide. And that guy was super cool. He brought us to show us his house and his private beach.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah. Forgot about him.
So anyways, just stuff to consider. And you know, public transportation could be a taxi, could be, you know, maybe you can get around by train or by bus or whatever. Like, it could be an Uber. But you might not necessarily have to rent a car. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe renting a car makes a lot of sense where you're going.
Well, let's talk about this trip. Jordan, we decided to rent a car because, well, Jordan, you do travel. Standard.
Yeah. And we learned from last year, we booked very early, so we actually got a reasonable deal on the car.
Yeah.
Which last year we looked at the last minute and it was not reasonable.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the reason why we decided.
And with Jordan here, like, what we're doing is we're splitting this car and the fuel costs four ways and the parking and all that crap. Like, you look at the cost of the car, I forget what it's gonna cost us, somewhere around $120 a day, I think. And then fuel there is really expensive. It's like $2 a liter or whatever. But if we split that four ways, it's like, now it becomes 50 cents a liter, right? So it's less of an expense. What about Airbnb versus hotel?
The one, my?
Yeah. Which is better?
Well, you have to do your research. I'm going to go back with research. So for an example, I do have an Airbnb in Portugal, and I've been trying to figure out my pricing. So it's pretty new. That started it back in February. So I'm very new at it, and I couldn't figure out what I want my pricing to be. And there is hostels that are like $100 to $200 a night. And then there's a full-blown house that I have, for an example, and I was charging like $85 when I first started. And clearly everyone would prefer having a whole house than having a hostel, right?
So what is a hostel? I've never really known.
Hostel's like a shared accommodation.
Pretend like a full-blown house, but like this, like one room will have like three, what are those called?
Three beds or bunk beds or
bunk cots. Beds. Yeah.
This depends. They're all different. Some are super nice. Some are less nice.
Yeah.
But typically they're like a shared accommodation. They'll sometimes throw in meals or a meal, like a breakfast or something. But it's really cheap and there's good and bad. Like the good is that like you could meet really cool people there. Yeah. Usually it's like a lot of younger travelers, similar mindset. You meet like really interesting people and you might decide like, hey, let's travel around together. But the downside is if you don't get cool roommates or there's like sketchy people, like your stuff is just there. And sometimes they'll have like a little safe, they'll have like a little safe or a locker, but not always. So it can potentially be sketchy and you're sleeping in rooms with other people, like strangers. So like, you know, someone's snoring or whatever, they stink, like you got to just deal with that. But you do tend to usually save a lot of money, but not always, as we've learned.
Yeah. It's a hit or miss, but yeah. So look at your options, look at hotels. Cause there's even, I know on the island that I'm from, there is hotels on Airbnb. So sometimes, a lot of them are doing that now. They're like, they rent out a room at a hotel, but it's on Airbnb. So sometimes that can be cheaper than going.
Join them.
Yeah.
What was funny though, is like, we'd met these girls from Spain, that we traveled with a little bit in a couple of the islands, and the last island we went to, they were staying at a hostel. It was pretty nice, actually.
It was,
but like, we
were sneaking in.
we shared a cab together at one point, and they were talking about it. And we said, "We're like, well, we have." They were a little worried about their hostel. They weren't certain they had a room reserved. I forget what the deal was. There's some concern about their hostel, and we had a 2-bedroom Airbnb that we had rented. Like, we just happened to rent it. We didn't realize we'd be making friends on this trip. But it was a good price. It was a nice spot and a good location. So we got it. We were talking and like, we did not pay very much more for this Airbnb than they did for their hostel. And we actually had the girls over for dinner one night and they were like blown away. Like, oh my God, this is beautiful. It's like, we didn't pay much more than you did. And what's more is like, we had just met them on that trip, but like, had we known in advance somehow, like we could have split, there's a 2-bedroom Airbnb. Like we could have split that, you know, but anyways, hostels can be a great deal, but not necessarily always.
Or hotels.
And same with hotels. And I have found sometimes Airbnbs with all the extra fees are getting really expensive sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can now, like often enough, find a hotel that's cheaper than an Airbnb. True. Because a lot of hotels don't show you all those extra fees. They're all kind of lumped in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just the idea behind all of this stuff is just shop around, compare all your options and don't assume anything. Don't assume one thing is better than another. Find out. Confirm. We already talked about currency exchanges being a thing, so be cognizant of it. And be aware that prices on all of this stuff, flights, hotels, currencies, they change. So check frequently. Like, check it during the budgeting phase, but also check it like shortly before the trip. Make sure that, you know, your expectations are in line with reality.
I don't know if this is a point, but Visa or MasterCard, sometimes it's better to use that as your
And we're going to get into that the very next section.
Okay, then I won't talk about it then.
And then the last point I have for as far as figuring out costs, depending on your trip, you might need insurance or maybe special gear. You might have to renew your passport. So that's a fee that would, you know, might, I don't remember, it cost $100, $200, depending how long you renew it for. So just be aware of these things, and those costs will have to factor in your budget as well. One thing that I found is that the insurance piece, right? Like, it's typically, some places actually require you to have travel insurance. But just in general, I think it's a good idea to have travel insurance because things happen, right? You can get hurt, you can get sick, whatever. So it's nice to cover your bases that way. But before you go out and buy travel insurance, it's usually cheap for many people. But if you have work benefits, look into it. Your work benefits might include it. And if you don't have work benefits or that's not included, check your credit cards. Our credit card, or my credit card, maybe yours too, actually has a travel insurance built into the credit card as well. You automatically have it by being a registered holder of that card.
So the same one as me?
Might. They're different cards, but similar. You might have it as well. So just have a look at what the benefits of your card are. You might already have insurance and not even know about it. So that's a way to save, you know, anywhere from $30 to $50, or maybe more if you've got some underlying risk factors or whatever, or your trip's like something crazy, like spelunking in a volcano, or I don't know.
And then if, say, your credit card does have it, do you have to do anything? Like, do you have to like print off something, or like, what if you did get hurt? How would you do it?
Well, I think you would. They would have a page about like how to reach them. Usually, it's a phone number you would call. So I would make sure to have quick access to that phone number. But I don't think
they would call them in the event of
something. In the event of an issue. But I would read the fine print of the card because, like, I'm not. It would probably depend carrier to carrier. And honestly, I've never used my credit card insurance. I noticed I had it, but I have insurance with my workplace benefits. So that's the card I always keep with me.
So I know mine is. I actually do a yearly, well, I haven't lately, but I do a yearly subscription to it. So it's like, I think $100, and I have unlimited travel insurance.
Well, you shouldn't do that because you have travel insurance.
That's what I said. I don't do it anymore. I used to do that before me and Dan were common law. So I'll pay $100 and I'll have unlimited. And the way that it would work is I had to use my Visa for anything as soon as I landed on a place. So for example, Mexico, I would use my Visa so they know where I am. And as soon as I land, I have to use my Visa again so they know how long I was away for. So if anything ended up happening between those two, they would know like the date that I landed and when the insurance should kick in. So it's little things like that. Like, I don't know about your card, because sometimes it's like you have to pay your trip with it. So,
yeah, that's right. Sometimes there's a clause.
So it's like you have to pay your trip with it, and then it's automatically insurance that comes with that trip.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
So we'll get into the next category here, which is a big sort of bulky item that I think now, Jordan, you might be able to get your say in a lot of this stuff, but how do you budget and save for the trip? So we keep talking about budgeting and saving, but how can you make sure you have enough money to fit your budget?
So we just did this the other day, actually, maybe a little bit late to the game, but because we already purchased our main flights already, which we budgeted that month for when we did it, because that was sort of the cheaper, it was on sale basically, or whatever the price was that time was all right. But we just went through our budget and we realized that. So we have a lot of expenses. We have our two kids, we're paying to an RESP. There's like sports and all kinds of stuff going on. So we were actually looking at it the other day and we're like, oh man, like it's going to be tough for us to pay for the remainder of the trip in one shot in 1 month, just with how everything's falling. So we actually split it into 3 months. Mm-hmm. So we're doing 500 this month, we're doing 1,000 next month, and then 500 a month in August. So we are kind of sort of borrowing for this trip in a sense, but having it planned in this budget. So we just cut back on something.
Those numbers you just threw out, that like those don't include the flights you've already paid for.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I honestly do believe you're probably over budgeting, which is a good thing.
They are.
Like you're saying, like we're borrowing technically. But you might not be if you're under budget.
Yeah. So after extensive conversations with Dan, talking about like what their expenses was on the same, more or less the same trip last year, Dan and I figured out that we would need to set aside, I think it was 5,000 we had said would be like over budgeting, or was it
5,000 would be a ridiculous amount of money.
It was 4,000. So we said
if you're including flights and stuff.
So total, I think we said 4,500 total just to over budget for it for Mel and I. For both of us.
Yeah, I would say if you have $4,500, all of everything included, you're certainly going to come home with some money in your pocket.
Yeah, which is the plan. Yeah, because like I said, I don't want to be on the trip being stressed about it. I want to know, okay, I've got $4,500 to spend, and we have it in our budget line. And then whatever we pay for, like that's everything, you know, like we pay for groceries, eat out and buy booze, whatever. Like all that's all expenses, right? So if we come home, yeah, like you said, we have excess. And okay, great. We just redistribute that budget wherever we took it from, basically. And right now I've just basically paused some of my investments. So the way that it works for us is that we spend, we have a payment that goes into the RESP for the kids. So it's like $760-something every month for the kids right now because we're playing catch up. And the rest of the investment money goes into my stocks for myself. Well, for Mel and I, but it's going into my TFSA right now. So I just decided that for 3 months, basically June, July, August, I'm just going to pause my own stock investing. And that'll be our trip money. But yeah, we'll see. We'll re-see how it is in August. If we have extra money, then, you know, we might just redistribute that or whatever. So that's how we decided to do it, just with everything that's going on. We're just chunking it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. You guys ever thought, sorry, this is more my experience, but you guys ever thought like making that part of your budget anyways. Like every
you
month.
You always have a travel fund.
Yeah. Yeah. Always so, have like $100 aside, for example.
Yeah. So we did talk about it when Mel went to Costa Rica and she came back. She says, oh, I want to do more vacationing. So we need to put in a vacation fund. It was right around the same time we said we were going to do the GIC ladder for the new car. So we actually added new car fund and vacation fund in our budget.
Awesome.
But we never actually put numbers to it. And okay. we never actually set aside money for it. Just because...
Things came up.
Yeah. Well, things came up. So extra sports came up, but also like the stock market kind of went down. There was a lot of stuff I wanted to buy. So I've pretty much been taking any extra money and just investing.
And that's another thing too. That's like totally legit. Is sometimes opportunities present themselves that will change your priorities. And that's all about setting your priorities. Mm-hmm. Like I've got a really large cash fund that for a number of reasons, it's kind of our hedge against a bunch of bad, potentially bad scenarios. But like if the stock market went down COVID style for no real reason and like some major companies that should be just fine go like 50% off, like you'd better believe I'm going to drop all my, well, most of my cash on that opportunity. And that's exactly what, like you're saying. You had some things that you wanted to save for and you had a plan, but then opportunity presented itself and that changes the plan. Right? Yeah. Like you can't be so rigid that you're going to miss out on opportunities.
Yeah. Like I always wanted to buy TD Bank and their stock price went down to a point where I thought, I should get in on it. And yeah, I dropped like $1,200 into, I've dropped like $2,000 into TD Bank.
That's good.
Yeah. So anyway, just an example, but,
as a stock.
Yeah, I hate them as a consumer bank.
I wouldn't know. I've never used
them. We won't get into that. We already talked about that other episode. Sure, what I was going to say now in terms of budgeting. But yeah, so the throwing in the lines for that kind of stuff. The other thing that we had planned too is we want to try and beef back up our emergency fund. So we dipped into it. We did dip into it a little bit when Mel's work was on strike and the pays were weird. So she's supposed to get like a retro pay. I'm the, where I work, there's been an issue with their internet and stuff. And so payroll has been affected. So they're not paying me as much as I should be getting. So there's that too. So we're going to be getting some chunks of money that we're not really planning for. We're just pretending it doesn't exist, but knowing that we're probably going to get like $2,000-$3,000 chunk of money in the next of months that we're just going to slide back into the emergency fund. So, anyway, that's just sort of the long.
But this goes full circle on budgeting, right? Like you need to know how to budget because like all these little things pop up.
Yeah, for sure.
I just wanted to do that.
So let's talk about a couple of tools for saving. And I have some pointed questions that I want to get into here for each of you. So when I say a tool for saving, so it's like now we have the budget. We know that number that we want to save for. Let's say it's $4,000, whatever. So Sabrina, let's start with you. What do you use to help you organize and store that money? Like when you save, let's say you save $400 this month to put towards travel, where do you put that money?
So it varies. When I first started off, I was using EQ Bank. I actually had a separate account. I actually named it sick/vacation because again, also when I'm sick, I do not get paid. So there's literally an account that I have with EQ Bank that's called sick/vacation. So I had it there because it was getting 2.5%.
Yeah.
So I had it sitting there, but then I found out CIBC has 4% if I kept on doing new deposits every month, which I am doing with vacation. So I ended up switching all my money to CIBC so I can get 4%.
So you're basically storing your travel fund wherever the highest interest is.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. And something that I can move my money back and forth that I won't, on like a TFSA.
Yeah, you don't want to lock it up.
Yeah. Or GIC.
Yeah. Jordan, what about you? Where do you stash your cash?
So we use
travel cash.
We use our emergency fund as like a float fund, basically. So we have like, that's where like our extra cash goes into. We basically contribute to it every month. Same as Sabrina, we had it stored in EQ Bank. We love EQ Bank, by the way. And to clarify, within the EQ Bank app, which is really awesome, it's probably the best banking app I've ever used.
Yeah.
You can... Sabrina said an account, but it's an account within your account, so it's not really a separate account.
Yeah.
You can have up to six separate accounts, but like you say, they're separate, but they're all under the same boat.
Yeah, but you have that option to customize. Like you can name it whatever you want, you can throw money in it. And same thing with the EQ Bank card. It's kind of again a separate sort of account, but attached. It's hard to, I don't know.
You'd have to play with it. It makes a lot of sense if you were looking at the screen.
Yeah. And it's really cool. Like, I actually really like it.
But yeah, I mean, that's like, we do that for the Money Basics business account. It's just linked to my personal account, but it's its own separate pool of cash titled Money Basics account. And we can track the expenses in and out from that account specifically. And you could do that. And I thought you did maybe, but you could, for example, create a separate account called travel sick fund.
Yep.
That's
I guess because now you're putting your money elsewhere, but I guess that account still exists.
It still exists. Yeah.
So you can do that. And that makes it really easy to visualize where your money is and how much you have and how close you are to that goal. And also, like, it's not the best interest rate, but it's a solid interest rate at 2.5%.
Okay. Here's my take on this. Cause I've talked about this a lot on this weekend. I've been on Blossom a lot, the social media app, and a lot of people have been asking about like emergency funds and high interest savings and all this kind of stuff. And I feel like I'm an advertisement wheel for EQ Bank, and I just like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. It's not the most, not the highest interest payout right now. But what I do like about it now so to finish your question, I'm going to start with that. Mm-hmm. We've moved our funds to just like you to Simply Financial because they were offering 5.25% on the high interest savings account.
Wow. So
we moved all of our emergency fund there. Now I have some gripes about this.
Me too.
So what I like about EQ Bank is that they pay you the 2.5% yearly, but they distribute it monthly and they pay it every month,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Okay, mm-hmm. good. And I like seeing that because you can literally see, oh, you have X amount and then they pay you a month. This is your interest. Same thing with the EQ Bank card. They give you 0.5% cash back on your expenses. They pay that every month and you see it. We've moved our funds to Simply. The first month rolls around and they only paid us like a fraction of what the 2.5% was. So I was like, what the hell? So I actually contacted them and they said, I contacted them and read the fine print and it said, oh, it'll get paid out in September. So like 5 months down the road, they're not going to pay you all the interest.
And they, of course, buried that in fine print. Oh, they do, but it's like the regular interest and then the additional 5% or whatever they pay at the end of it.
Yeah.
So of course, that's buried in the fine print.
Yes. So what I like about EQ Bank is that I find that you can find any answer to any question you have very easily was one.
Yeah.
And two, they don't have these hidden things.
No, it's like, that's their whole thing. They're very upfront about everything, like front and center.
Like I've had people on Blossom ask me about EQ Bank a few times, like, oh, like, is there a minimum that you can, a maximum that you can withdraw? And I was like, I don't know. And I literally just Googled it and it took me to a full titled line on the EQ Bank website in their fact sheet saying, is like literally that question and it answered it right there.
Yeah.
Like first page.
Yeah.
I was like, boom.
And you like copy paste.
That's exactly what I did. I was like, here it is.
EQ Bank is trying to be as transparent as possible, which is super refreshing in the banking industry.
Yeah.
Now there's always going to be the odd oversight or whatever. So like some random specific question that they hadn't thought of, but you can see their intentions are like their heart's in the right place. They're trying their best to be as clear with everything as they can be, which I really respect.
I don't know. I know Dan didn't, but I don't know if you did, but EQ recently this week or was it last week, they came out with an email for a survey. I don't know if you got it. I ended up getting in. I ended up doing the survey and they asked a lot of questions that I love EQ Bank, but like, I have a business, so I want to open a business account. And that was one of the questions, like, would you open a business account with us? And what would you want on the business account?
Yeah. They're still an up and coming business and they're still developing their platform. Yeah. So there's features that don't exist, but they're clearly working on them when you see stuff like that.
Exactly.
I would honestly like to use EQ Bank as my only bank.
Me too.
And they're going that way, I think.
It seems like it. Like, you should look at the survey. It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I really liked using the EQ Bank cash card. And now that we've switched our funds back to PC, we're using we're on Simply and we're using the credit card now instead of the EQ Bank card to get points. We're back to kind of like our old routines of like, we're budgeting everything, but like, it's still that credit card use. It's not as transparent as the EQ Bank card. And it's kind of screwing us up a little bit again. And we've caught it the other day. We're like, man, we just talked about this, how like the credit card screws us up. Anyway, it's kind of a long story, but we're getting better at it. But anyway, sorry, to get back to the travel budgeting thing, what I would like to do, is, and I think automation is key. I think if we did take a portion of our paycheck, say it's $100 every 2 weeks, so $200 a month, slide that into would be great is if we can keep it in EQ, have a fund like what you have, you know, like have a vacation fund and just slide it in there, you know, and that way it's in the EQ Bank totaling with all of our money, but it's sort of kind of separate.
Yeah.
I think that's the direction we're going to be moving in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of touched on all these things, but let me just tie a little bow on it all and wrap it all up together. So it's nice if possible to have a separate account where you can put your travel fund, not mandatory, but keep it organized is very nice. The only thing you do is track it on a spreadsheet if you didn't have that ability.
I am doing that now, actually, because with CIBC, with where I'm parking my money now, I have other money in my savings.
Yeah, so you're just tracking
what's So I'm tracking it on a budget sheet to like how much I'm putting in there.
Yeah, that's good. And then the other factor that we all sort of brought up a little bit, but maybe didn't make clear to our less informed potential person listening, the interest yield that you can get should be a factor, not the only factor, but like if you can park your account, your money in like an RBC account where you're getting like 0.1%, or you can park that same money at EQ Bank, we're getting 2.5%, or maybe you park it in Wealthsimple and you're getting 4%, right? Like, it's beneficial to get a higher rate because then the money that's just sitting there waiting to be used for vacation will actually accumulate a little bit more money. And it won't be ridiculous amounts, but you might get, you know, 10 or 20 bucks a month. I'm not really sure how much money you have in this account, but you can get, you know, 10 bucks a month interest payments. And if you've got that cash stash there for a year, that's like 100 and something extra bucks that you might end up having that you wouldn't have otherwise had.
EQ Bank plug again. Something else is Simply Financial with the 5.25% is all great and dandy, but it's on new deposits only.
That's right.
So they won't pay you that in the interest you accumulate. Versus EQ Bank, the 2.5% interest, they pay you the money that goes in that account, the interest payment, then will make 2.5%.
Yeah.
Is that how? Okay, because CIBC and Simply are kind of the same.
Yeah, well, Simply's a
yeah.
a version of CIBC.
Because mine is, so you have to deposit at least $200 a month.
We don't have that.
All these rules.
Yeah, so I have to deposit every month $200 or more. It doesn't really matter, but it's the limit of $200 a month for me to be eligible for the 4%.
Yeah, see, we didn't have limits like that, but it is there is a limit of time. It says new on new deposits until August 31st.
Okay.
And they pay us the interest in September.
Yeah. No, but it shows me the interest every month. It's just like I have to do the 200. If I don't reach the 200, then I don't get interest. Yeah. At least the 4%. I think I get like 2.something% instead. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, let's focus up. We gotta get this thing moving forward.
Sorry, we just love EQ.
I know it is. So you can park your vacation fund. You know, find a nice account with a decent interest rate would be good. Some other options that you could consider. The GIC might make sense depending how far ahead you're planning. GICs will give you a guaranteed rate of return, but it's also going to lock your money up in like most cases. It will lock your money up for a period of time that you agree to. So if you're planning a year ahead, you know, you wouldn't be able to take a 1 year GIC because that money wouldn't become available until it's vacation time. Like it'd be too late. So, but you know, it might make sense to lock up a 6 month GIC and you would get, I'm not sure what rates are today, probably 3.5-4%. I'd be surprised if it was 4%, but it's an option. You could do a GIC or even buy several GICs in like a ladder formation. Just make sure that it matures, meaning the money cashes out and becomes available to you in like with a decent window before it's vacation time or before it's time to start buying stuff for that vacation. Just make sure the money's available when you need it available. Another alternative option you can do, let's say you're in the RBC account or one of those crappy bank accounts that pay 0.1% interest and you want more interest, you could theoretically, if you were a little bit more of a risk taker, you could invest in these ETFs. There's a couple of them. The only one I'm familiar with is called Cash, C-A-S-H. And essentially what they do, it's like it trades like a stock, but what they do is they just invest the money into a bunch of like high interest bank accounts and GICs, and then they pay you out a distribution every month. So it's like a stock that doesn't really move in value very much, but pays you out monthly. Now, I have seen it move in value every month. It fluctuates very, very minimally. So in theory, the amount of money you put in should never really change, not more than like a couple of cents or maybe a dollar or two.
And what's the distribution on it?
It changes all the time, and that's going to depend what they can invest in.
Okay.
But I've been averaging in there anywhere from 4 to 4.5%. I think I got 5% once. So it changes. So you're not guaranteed. It just depends on what products are available out there. So that's, you know, there's a little bit more variability there. But if you wanted to take advantage of a high interest rate account, you didn't have one and you were unwilling to do so, this is an option that exists. But I would argue it carries slightly higher risk than some of these other options. If you needed to save more money in order to afford the trip, so like you've done your budget, and you're like, holy crap, these numbers don't add up. Well, you can do some of the stuff we sort of talked about. You could work overtime. This goes back to the work ethic thing. If you have that available to you, do it. That's what I do before my trips, well in advance. I work a crazy amount of overtime, and I use that overtime money in a separate pool of cash, and that's what I use to pay for my trip. So it doesn't really affect my normal day-to-day budget. It's all extra cash, and I'm lucky that I have that opportunity available to me.
Yeah, so let's just be clear in this point, right? Like, here at Money Basics, we're very much in line with, if you guys are in debt, you're not going on vacation.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you have high interest debt. If you have any other debt above your mortgage, that is being paid off. You are not going on a trip, honestly. And that's just, I'm being rigid on that for a reason, because you're just going to get yourself in more trouble and more debt. And it's just not a good, it's not a good scenario to be in, and you want to pay off that debt. Because that's a guaranteed investment. We've been through that. And then, yeah, so you, Sabrina, will work extra because you lose an income going on vacation. Dan, you work overtime to save some extra money for your trip. I do the same thing. I've got my two side gigs that I do. I do washing cars, and I've been doing a little bit of DJing on the side. I actually had a friend approach me the other day, and he was like, oh, I see you're washing cars again. He was one of the people that was really into helping me advertise my car washing business when I was doing it, like trying to get it really going.
Yeah.
And he was like, I see you're posting a lot about car washes, because I was trying to make a point on the Money Basics socials that, you know, side income is not a bad idea and work ethic and all that kind of stuff. And I said, yeah, kind of. I said, we're saving for a trip or whatever the cost was. So yeah, absolutely. Working extra, you know, if that's a side gig or taking extra shifts at your job or both.
Yeah. Before you go on your trip too, another thing to factor in, we've sort of mentioned on it, was like, look into your payment method when you go on a trip, especially if you're going abroad, like outside of Canada. Look into your cards. Look like, what kind of fees do your credit cards carry? Are you going to need cash when you're there? Does it make more sense to convert your cash here in Canada before you go? Or does it make sense to do it there somewhere, like at an airport, or maybe there's a bank that you have access to when you arrive? The conversion fees change from place to place. And that's how a lot of these places, whether it's a bank or a, you know, a money lender place or a conversion place, they make their money by, they actually mark up the conversion rate. So like I talked about, the conversion fees always change, but like you might go to a place and they charge you like 3% more and don't tell you that, because that's how they make their profits. The difference between the actual conversion rate and what this place is charging, that's the business model. Right. So compare all these different places and compare that with the conversion fee of going somewhere. One way I found to get around this mostly is that I have a special traveling MasterCard. MasterCard actually has a very, very, they have like a preferred conversion rate for foreign currencies. So you're almost guaranteed to do at least as well as the best place you can find that will convert your cash. But you might do better than a lot of them because they don't charge this ridiculous fee. The challenge is, where we went in Portugal, a lot of places there, not everywhere, but there's some places that operate cash only. It's much more of a cash world there than it is here. So I can't just use MasterCard for every single purchase. So I needed cash. So I got that cash by going to an ATM, which I'd researched before doing it, which is fine. But now there's a little fee every time you pull cash, and there's a limit to how much cash you could pull. So I think I was paying like a €5 fee every time I pulled cash from an ATM, and I would only be able to pull like €200 at a time or something like that.
It was like €200 or €400. Yeah, I don't remember.
No, it wasn't €400.
No?
€200 or €250 maybe. Oh, but okay. Anyways, the fact is, I did the math and it made sense to do it that way and just try to do as many purchases on the MasterCard directly as I could. But we would pull cash frequently enough, and it ended up being probably about $20 worth of fees throughout the whole trip, which isn't a lot, but something to consider.
Oh, right? I'm feeling another EQ.
I know, and this is where we're going. So go for it. Tell us about it.
Well, I don't know all the details, so throw it in. But so the EQ Bank Cash Card, you can use any ATM in the world.
Yep, I think so.
That accepts MasterCard.
Anywhere that MasterCard is accepted.
So yeah. You can use an EQ Bank card anywhere in the world that accepts MasterCard, and they will reimburse you the ATM fee.
Yeah, but not, so they'll, how do I explain this? The ATM itself will potentially charge you a fee that won't be reimbursed. That's the caveat to that. For example, when I travel with my MasterCard, this was before EQ Bank had a card, I would pay the fee at the ATM to pull cash. MasterCard would charge me like a $2 fee for pulling cash from an ATM. And then the ATM carrier itself, this Portuguese company, would charge me $3. Now, EQ, from what I understand, will charge you zero. They'll reimburse you if there's any sort of like bank fee, but if the ATM itself, the person who owns the ATM, charges you a fee, that's on you. You eat that cost. But now you're looking at, you know, maybe a $3 fee.
And is that a travel condition?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not within Canada.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, within Canada, everything's reimbursed.
That's right, yes. And I've proven that.
Yeah. So my plan for this trip is to primarily use my EQ bank card. I'm going to try that because it seems to make more sense than my MasterCard. So I'm going to try it out. I'm a little hesitant because Sabrina has had a couple of issues with some purchases with her EQ bank card.
Yeah.
I think, what was it, Costco and paying at CRA or something like that, right?
Yeah, because what EQ bank card is,
it's a prepaid MasterCard.
Yeah, it's a prepaid MasterCard. So certain places do not like that it's a prepaid MasterCard. Mm-hmm. So they won't accept it.
Yeah.
And so, Costco was one of them, and I was really pissed about it.
So how much money are you going to throw in there?
Well, you can update it with the app.
Oh, that's true.
In real time.
That's true.
I'll just probably load what I need.
Thinking of putting my vacation/sick fund all onto my EQ bank.
And it still gets 2.5%. So what happens is you move the money onto the card, really kind of like an account.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the card will still pay 2.5% for the money to sit on the card, and it'll give you 0.5% cash back on all purchases. So it's
In line like to pay for something, be like, oh, it's over 150 bucks because I'm like, oh, I just just right on the spot before I even get to the cash transfer the money.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm going to try that this year, but I'm also bringing that travel MasterCard, the one I used last year. I'll have that as a backup, and I'll try to probably keep a little bit of cash with me at all times because some places don't even accept cards. So I'll let you know how it works out if anyone's interested.
We might do a podcast in Portugal. I think that would be cool.
We might. It'll be poor quality, but we might. So let's talk about handling finances while you're actually on the trip. So once you're at your destination, how do you guys run your finances? Do you keep like running and checking your budget and expenses, or do you just front load your plan so well that once you're there, you don't really worry that much about it?
So last year, I pretty much trusted myself that I did the budgeting and just kind of forgot about it. This year, I think I'm going to do something different. I actually think I'm going to continue budgeting while I'm on the trip because A, it's a little bit longer. And also I want to see how much I'm actually spending on this trip. I think that's going to be exciting. And even last year you did an article and on that article, you're trying to figure out exactly how much we spent. So I think it would be cool if we actually see that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm planning on continuing budgeting and checking out my budget.
What about you, George?
Depends. So I think we're going to get the phone card, which will have a little bit of data.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll probably have at least 5 gigs, I would think.
Okay. So we'll see. Because my budgeting.
Plus there's Wi-Fi everywhere.
Yeah. My budgeting app requires data. So I will probably just continue doing it on the fly. But we have it, like I said, a cushion enough that I'm not going to stress about it too much. But I will track my expenses.
Yeah. That's how I did it last year. And I'll probably do it the same way this year, is, you know, just save the money up front, plan a rough guideline. And I always overestimate on purpose so that I have more money saved than what I'll likely need. So you guys, like, do you intend to have like a daily spend amount?
No.
No.
No, you're not going to be like 50 bucks a day or something, like whatever.
No. Like I said, we have a cushion built in, so we're just going to track our expenses. I mean, we'll probably put in I don't know. That's, we're only gone for 10 days, so it's not like you guys are a little different than us, right? So
yeah. The other thing too that I have here that we have to like factor in is like, it's easier for your part of the vacation, Jordan, because when we get to the island, it's going to be pretty well planned. Like we kind of know what our expenses are going to be as far as activities and whatnot. So you don't have to get too like concerned about how much you're going to be spending day to day, because we have a pretty good idea. Like we know we can budget for it very well, versus our 3 weeks on the mainland becomes more challenging because we don't know exactly what we're going to be doing. So like, for example, we go to the aquarium or the zoo, or we catch all these trains and stuff, or like we might have an impromptu visit. You know, I find out about some Roman ruins that I want to go see. And like, that's not, if we didn't plan for it, it becomes a little harder to budget for these sort of spur of the moment events.
Yeah.
So it's something we kind of have to deal with. And that's why I kind of budget more than what I need, just to be ready for these types of things.
And I do a lot of research, which is, I know Sundays, every museum in Portugal is free. So if we do want to, like, if Dan sees a museum and is like, oh, this is really cool, I'd be like, hey, let's wait until Sunday when it's free, so we don't have to pay like 10 euros or whatever it might be.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like,
money saving tips.
Exactly. You just need to look at the little tips.
And since we're on tips, this is my last little section of things I wanted to talk about, and that is money saving tips. So there's some things that worked really well for us that I kind of thought to list out here, and there's probably a bunch that I'm missing. So George, feel free to shout out if you have any ideas. But some things that saved us some money was grocery shopping was one example. So when we were in a spot for more than a couple of days, like more than a day or two, let's say, we would go to a grocery stores and get some snacks or maybe some breakfast food. And obviously a big part of traveling is to experience the food, like restaurants and stuff. So we planned to do a lot of that, and we did. But for like the smaller meals, especially we were on the go, we did a lot of like going around place to place, a lot of hiking, that kind of thing. We would go to the grocery store, we would pack a lunch for hiking. We do a little picnic lunch. And it's kind of cool because you're in this like strange grocery store, like strange produce you don't normally get. And like the meats are different. And I'm this like white English dude trying to figure out what this meat is. And it was kind of fun.
I'm really excited for Jordan to experience that.
It's
different.
It's the same, but different. But anyways, it saved us actually a lot of money grocery shopping. And then just
sometimes
finding out certain meals because we would handle them ourselves. So that was one tip. Packing lunches was a big thing, and making your own breakfast. That was kind of hit or miss. Sometimes it was quite cheap just to go out for breakfast.
Yeah.
It just depended where we were. We already talked about public transit. There's also opportunities sometimes for splitting cabs that we came across, like we did with the girls once or twice. And we didn't really split the cabs. It was because we were traveling together a lot. So it'd be like, you guys get this one, we'll get the next one kind of thing. But, you know, if you meet some friends, or make some friends, I should say, it could make sense to travel as a pack. You know, if you guys all want to go and see a certain thing and you have some wiggle room in your schedule, maybe go see that thing together and split travel expenses to get there.
Right? But look into it. Like, we found a bus in Florge,
for example. Yeah, that was crazy
cheap. And it was, wasn't it like €2 or something? Yeah. And it brought us everywhere we wanted to go. And yeah, it was pretty easy to navigate, really.
Yeah, so explore your options.
Yeah.
I also wrote here to walk. Like, don't be afraid of walking. Some of the islands, we walked a lot. Like, we were averaging like 10 kilometers a day, sometimes more.
Way more.
Well, if we were hiking, obviously way more. But like, even like a chill day, it was like 10 kilometers, just wandering around towns and stuff. We had some nice hiking backpacks that would distribute the weight very well. And we'd walk around a lot. Like, remember the one day we ended up, we were touring around for the day and we got back to the city, and our house was like a 5 kilometer walk straight uphill away from this town. And we had the cab drop us off in town because we wanted to go out for dinner and stuff. So we went for dinner, ordered some booze that was way bigger than we thought it was going to be, got a little drunk, did some grocery shopping, and we're like, we could just walk home. And we walked 5 kilometers straight uphill, and it was kind of brutal, but also like a lot of fun. We got some beautiful views. I chased lizards around. Like, it became an experience in itself, and it saved us the cost of a cab. I'm not saying you have to do this every time. Yeah, but no, like,
I died.
What? Or like the other time in Pico when we walked through the vineyards. Like, what a cool experience that was. We walked like 8K that day to get into town. We could have spent $50 or $30. I forget what it was. We could have spent money on a cab.
Yeah.
But we decided to walk, and we ended up going through like the most beautiful vineyard, this like UNESCO World Heritage Site. It was just unreal. So sometimes, like, you know, doing things to save a bit of money, like walking, can actually turn into an experience in and of itself. I'm not saying it's applicable every time, but it can be an option.
Yeah. Well, especially in Europe. I find Europe, you can walk pretty much everywhere. But if you're talking about like Canada, there's no way you can.
Yeah, that's right. And like, we ended up on this one island at Florsch. It was like, it's a pretty big island. It's super remote, but it's like big comparatively. It's an island. It's not huge, but it's pretty big. And we were trying to find ways across. This was before we realized the bus was an option. There's like very few cab drivers because it's such little population. So all the cabs were booked, and we couldn't figure out how to get from our place on one end of the island to the other end. And I was literally looking at how long it would take us to hike this thing. And I was like, I don't know, it was going to be like 3-4 hours to hike the whole length of the island.
It was six.
6 hours. Yeah. But then we'd have to hike back. We were seriously considering it. Then we found the bus option.
Which, thank God, because it was all uphill.
Yeah. Yeah. The bus was cool. Yeah. Anyways, and then the last little point I have here is, like, back onto this whole idea of rental cars. Sometimes that's a really viable option, but don't think just rental cars. Like, look into motorcycles. Can you rent a moped? Like, sometimes mopeds are cheap, and if you got like a nice enough climate for it and, you know, decent roads and stuff, and it's not like a 401 style highway, maybe a moped will save you a whole bunch of money, and that's hilariously fun as well. Or like when we were in Calgary, we got those stupid little scooter things, and we laughed hard. Like, there's other options, even bicycle rentals. Think outside the box how to get from point A to point B, and you might save yourself a bunch of money. A key example, like we talked about, was the guided tour we paid for in Portugal. You could rent a car for like $200 a day, or we can get a guided tour for like $100, and the guy would wait for us while we hike, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, all kinds of options out there. Just in the interest of keeping this thing in a reasonable time limit, I think we're kind of about where we usually are at. I think this is probably a decent spot to sort of wrap it up. Do you guys have anything that maybe we haven't covered in my script? We got a little wiggle room if we need it.
To wrap everything up in a bow, pretty much I find what we kept on saying is just do your research.
Research, yeah.
Research, like... I know this podcast was pretty much about, well, this episode, sorry, is pretty much about budgeting for a trip. And best way I would say is plan ahead and budget each month.
Yeah.
So
give yourself a long runway so it doesn't become a huge contribution.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like the month before your trip, I need $3,000, start early and it becomes, you know, $300 a month or something.
How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time.
Damn. Yeah. I did remember what I wanted to add.
Okay, good.
So in terms of grocery shopping, can be a very viable option if you have the equipment to cook.
Yeah.
If that is place. But even without the ability to cook, I think we were pretty lucky. I think most of the spots we were at had kitchens. But even without a kitchen, you can do like cold cut sandwiches. Like you don't need much to have. I mean, it's not the fanciest of food, but if you're looking to save a buck, like you can get a couple of cold cuts in a bun, slap it together, you know. But yeah, you're right. Like we got a bunch of cheese and butter. We were carrying that around place to place, and we were like, it was a big hassle. Like we got to get to a fridge quick, you know. And it worked out. Like luckily our Airbnbs were all good. But yeah, something to consider. Like if we had like a 18-hour travel time in the Portuguese heat, like maybe having a bag full of green cheese wouldn't be amazing. You get there, it's just melted. Oh, my cheese.
Not kidding. I literally had a suitcase full of cheese.
We had like 8 kilos of cheese.
I'm not kidding.
But why do you have so much cheese? We went through customs with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good place to shut it down, I think. So we're going to post links in the description to a bunch of stuff we referenced. So feel free to have a look through the description. If there's any confusion about some of the things we plugged, you'll find
good,
it there.
It's Always Sunny reference. You should have said, like, what amount of cheese is a good amount of cheese? No amount of cheese.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Cheers.